sites of sci-fi.com.
What Shakespeare did for the theater, what the Beatles did for popular music, Stan Lee did for comics. He reinvented the medium by creating more popular and beloved superhero comics and characters than any other creator in comic book history. Stan is here to talk about his amazing career in his new comic book, Romeo and Juliet, The War. Stan, thanks for talking to us.
Hey, listen, thanks for that introduction. I'm sorry you had to stop so soon.
Before we get to Romeo and Juliet, The War, we have some important questions, including one from my son's Hebrew school class, who want to know, is it really pronounced Spider-Man, or is he a nice Jewish boy named Spider-Man?
It's Spider-Man, no matter what your beliefs are.
I think it's sort of a jokey question, but the idea is assimilation.
Actually, I call him Spidey, you know.
Because you're friends with him.
Yeah, did you ever think that the Marvel comic books were the only ones? I made up a nickname for everybody. Now, nobody ever called Superman Soupy or Batman Batty or the Green Lantern Greeny. But all our characters, we had Spidey, I called Thor Goldilocks, and on and on. And it's amazing. None of the other companies ever caught on to it. They never bothered to use that informality.
There were huge differences between the way you created your characters and other people did. The other characters seemed to sort of assimilate to the norm, where you sort of reveled in the differences in your characters and their flaws.
Yeah, well, I'm a very flawed guy, so it was easy for me to write that sort of thing.
Did you relate to one character more than the other? Is there one?
No, whichever one I was writing at the time, that was the one I was relating to.
How did the idea of using superhero costumes come about? Is that because it's just colorful and they're easy to draw, and you don't have to draw, you know, pants? And did it come out of necessity? Did it come out of practicality? Did it come out of fantasy?
It came out of fan mail. I'll tell you what happened. I've never understood the reason for costumes. I know if I had a superpower, I wouldn't run out and buy a costume. Which is not to say I don't have a superpower. Don't misunderstand me. But when I did the Fantastic Four, which was the first of Marvel's big, famous superheroes, I decided not to give them costumes because I figured I'm going to try to be more realistic. So in the first issue, they didn't have costumes. The book sold so well, and we got so much fan mail, but almost every letter said, we love the book, but if you don't give them costumes, we'll never buy another issue. So I don't need a house to fall on me. I realized, for some reason that I do not understand, the fans of superheroes like their heroes to be wearing costumes.
And you also didn't give them secret identities. While they had informal nicknames like the Torch or the Miserable Girl, everybody knew who they were.
That's right. Well, in the case of the Fantastic Four, anyway.
Right.
Now, in Romeo and Juliet, there are no secret identities. Is he afraid that we may not have time to get to that?
Romeo and Juliet has more. Your version, Romeo and Juliet, The War, has more robots than the original Shakespearean version. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have more robots and cyborgs and medically advanced humans and everything. Well, what we did, of course, we took the whole plot of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, and there's no way you can improve on Shakespeare, but you can make it different. And we set the story in the future, when there are cyborgs and when you could have medically advanced humans, and we played up the war bit a little bit more than the battle, you know, the hostility and the actual war in our story between the Montagues and the Capulets. We obviously featured that even more than Shakespeare did because we have our comic book audience to think of. But it is basically the Shakespearean story done as it would have been written by a top comic book writer for today's audiences.
And you've always been a Shakespeare fan. I've been reading interviews back to the 70s where you said that you were reading Shakespeare as early as 8 or 9 or 10.
It was wonderful. Even when I was a kid, I probably didn't understand most of it, but I loved the language, the poetry, the what-ho Horatio type of things that he used to write. I loved the fact that everything was bigger than life and all the characters were so beautifully delineated.
When Branagh was doing his Thor, he thought of that as a Henry V story. And I wonder if Peter Parker and Hamlet share a similar DNA.
Well, I certainly wasn't thinking of that consciously, but you know, Shakespeare was such an indescribably magnificent writer that it's hard to write anything at all that you can't in some way feel, well, this is a little bit similar to a theme that Shakespeare wrote, because he handled everything.
You know, there's one famous Shakespeare line, "The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves," which I think really speaks to how you write. You always find the fault in the characters and still make us root for them because of their faults.
Well, I think that makes for more interesting reading and interesting movie viewing. If you have a character who's just perfect, he really is uninteresting. But if you can have a character who's flawed and still trying to do the right thing, then an audience can relate to him, because that's the way most people are. I mean, I hate to admit it, but even I am not fully perfect.
No.
I'm my best.
Say it ain't so, Stan. You know, so much of your writing also seems to be, in the most positive way, an act of defiance, where if it was traditionally people did this, I'll do this. You won't have a teen as a superhero, I'm going to do a teen.
Well, it makes it more fun. You never want to write things that have been written before. And, of course, it isn't easy to find anything that hasn't been written. But you're quite right. I, and I'm sure many, many other writers, were always trying to say something in a different way or to present something that the reader hasn't read before. That's what makes what we do so much fun.
And I know that it's a... You know, people say comic books as movies are better now because of the technology. But when you go back and read your original stories, I respectfully think that many of them work best as a comic book form. That some of your ideas are just best translated as comic books. Do you?
Well, modesty forbids me from agreeing with you too much, but I think there's a lot of merit in what you said.
So people should go and read your comics. They should find Romeo and Juliet, The War, at 1821comics.com. There's a great trailer where you actually read from Shakespeare. We get to see some clips from the... we get to see some images from the new book. What else should we know about the new book?
Well, let me put it this way. Anybody who loves superhero comics, anybody who loves Spider-Man and Iron Man and Thor, they're going to love Romeo and Juliet. Anybody who doesn't like comics but loves a great romance, they're going to love Romeo and Juliet, The War. Anybody who doesn't like comics or romances but likes an exciting story, they're going to love Romeo and Juliet, The War. I think we've really grabbed just about everybody in this book. And just the visuals alone and the feel of the... You haven't seen it. It's so big and beautiful on expensive paper. The one that I'm holding in my hands now is about the best-looking coffee table book I've ever seen.
Right, this is a major coffee table book.
But it looks, you actually get a story you can read. I don't know, I forget what we're charging for it, but I know it isn't enough.
Stan, we thank you very, very much for talking to us. We thank you for your comics, and we thank you.
Hey, listen, I never enjoyed myself. You're a great interviewer. We have to do this more often.
I'll call you tomorrow at the same time, and then every day after that.
I'll be waiting.
Okay, thank you very much, Stan. Take care.